Session number 21613, Wheel 8.
Along with the advances, I understand you were to, as we've mentioned, be walking in minefields.
Mm.
Booby traps were another
yes.
thing. What sorts of booby traps are we talking about in the desert?
Oh, well, they'd set them up on all sorts. They'd set them on up on a machinery that was left. They'd set them up in dugouts and all sorts of places, various sorts of booby traps. But I can't say that I personally ever came across any. But they did use a lot of booby traps, the Germans.
What did they entail? What the average sort of booby trap used?
Well, I think I don't really quite know. I couldn't really tell you on that. But I imagine that it involved explosives and tripwires. Tripwires were quite common. And some of the tripwires too were linked up to a series of booby traps or mines, set them all off. But fortunately, none of our fellows, well, my little part, ran into those.
I'm interested to discuss what it's like to be advancing, and you mentioned this earlier on, to a certain degree, but what it's like to be advancing in the desert with absolutely no cover.
Well, I think you do feel very vulnerable. If you're in a position, as we were numbers of time, when you're in trenches, dugout trenches, and you've got to get up out of that and go, that is a time when you've got to really push yourself to get up out, you know, because you're coming out of cover and into the open, and I think it's one of the hardest times when you're advancing, to get out of cover and start to go into the open.
Once you're out of cover, what's the feeling?
Well,
like?
Then, you know, it's just, you change that. You just, there's nothing you can do about it. But forcing yourself out can be a little bit hard sometimes. I think all soldiers have probably experienced that. And don't let anybody tell you they weren't afraid, because everybody was very afraid.
Is it just a question of sort of potluck in some regard?
Mm.
So whether your number's up?
I think it is potluck, yes. I think it's fate. It's definitely fate, yeah. At a later stage, when you get on to the later part of the war, I'll tell you a couple of examples of how fortunate I was just with fate. But I think if your number's up, your number's up. And, yes.
What was the reputation that the Australian soldiers had in regard the enemy, the way they looked upon you?
Well, from what we've gathered, particularly afterwards, and perhaps we might have known it while we were in Tobruk, they obviously had a very high regard for us, I think, because of the way they treated us, to start with. And I also think that they concentrated very hard on trying to break our morale with propaganda. I think the Germans generally had a pretty high regard for the Australians. And I think probably a pretty high regard for most of the units that served in the desert. I'm sure they did. Actually, you know, we've got a reunion coming of the Rats of Tobruk in Queensland, coming up in September, and the Rats are coming from all over the world to it, including 17 ex-enemy. And there's a big reunion in Queensland. I, unfortunately, for other reasons, can't go to it, but it'll be very interesting to meet these fellows. They've... all chaps have been in the desert, these you know, they're all Germans, of course. It's very interesting. And it'll be interesting perhaps to ask some of the questions you've put to me, to ask them. what they really thought of us. Perhaps they'd have to be. They wouldn't be able to say they didn't think much of us, would they?
Yeah. Any impression that the Australians were seen as sort of a bit larrikinish?
Australians? Oh, I think a lot of there are larrikins and Australians, of course, lots of them. But generally, I think Australians aren't larrikins, really. They like a good time and they play up, of course. And they remember, too, at that stage, everybody was young. But generally, Australians are... I think they're pretty well behaved. As long as somebody doesn't try to cheat them all. I think a lot of the trouble happened, perhaps on leave in towns in Egypt, and not much in Palestine, but sometimes in Egypt, where they thought they were being taken down, they might react a bit, you know, and I think that did happen. But generally Australians are a pretty placid lot, unless they get really aroused.
What about in a fighting situation, in a battle? Are they any different from any other soldier, do you think?
Let me say this. I don't think they're any different to any other really good soldier, because Australians are good soldiers. In the main, they are really very good soldiers.
Where do you think that comes from?
Oh, I think it comes from our country. I think Australia is a particularly, possibly, for a lot, was a pretty hard country, and a lot of Australians came from the country, the bush. Fairly tough life, a lot of them, and they grew up being pretty strong and willing to put up with a lot of hardships. And I think that probably served them in good stead in warfare. You know. They weren't a soft lot. Australians were certainly not in those days, were not soft. Pretty fit.
As I understand, there were things that Churchill said that because of the magnificent drive towards the coast by the Australians, achieved by ceaseless bitter fighting, helped to swing the whole battle in favour of the British. Mm. What did it mean to know that they had been you who helped that battle be won?
Oh, I think it gave you great pleasure to know that you... that what had happened, and of course I think it was the first really big defeat of Rommel, and it's the first time when Churchill gave the order to ring out the bells in London. It was pretty quite an emotional time, really was. But no, I think we felt we'd done our bit. But I think at the back of most of our minds there was a bit of a worry for home, I think. You know, people were probably, most of us were probably starting to worry a little bit about home. Because a lot of Japanese propaganda got through the Germans, I suppose, and through the Italians in Egypt, because a lot of espionage there. And they made all sorts of false claims about Japs having invaded Australia, and they used to talk about the Americans taking all our girls.
I was going to talk to you about that, but I did want to know how long after your involvement at Alamein was it when you realised the situation of Rommel having to retreat, of the success of the situation?
Yeah.
How long after it did you realise... did it take you to realise what had happened?
Oh, I don't know. I can't just remember. We might not even have known the full story till we got back to Palestine. Yeah. I think probably we didn't. We were just withdrawn then, and we moved back to Palestine, and all really in preparation for coming back to Australia.
What was it like then to... one minute again be in battle and next be hauled off to Palestine?
Oh, yeah, well, No, I suppose it was, certainly Centre was quite a relief. But we never really knew that we were going to go home. And I think even when we got on the ships, we didn't know we were going home, of course. They kept all that. In fact, we very nearly didn't. We were very nearly diverted to Singapore. Thank God we weren't. That we weren't. They pretty strict security everywhere. You know, you weren't really told much about what was happening.
Mm. Tell us about the process of leaving. What was it like to leave Palestine? What was it like to be leaving the Middle East and North Africa?
Well, I think it was good leaving, knowing that we'd done our job, and I think we all felt we'd done a good job. And but I think it was just that ever present thought that we wanted to get home. But I think everybody felt that, you know, what we'd done was satisfactory. And then, of course, we had a big, we just can't remember when it was, but and where exactly it was, but we had a big review by Alexander, and the whole division marched past.
Tell us about that occasion.
Well, that was quite impressive.
Where was that?
And I can't just remember exactly where that was. It certainly wasn't in Egypt, it was in Palestine.
Mm.
But he gave us a very good wrap-up in his speech.
What sort of things did he say to you?
Oh, well, he just, you know, I think I remember him, he said that, you know, having Australians under his command was one of the great parts of his army life, to have had us serve. And it's quite a stirring address. Mm. Yeah.
Was there any sadness, sort of having to leave?
Well, I suppose in a way it was, you know, but not really, I don't think. I think most of us just really wanted to get on to the next job. And we'd been 2 years away, which is quite a long time in those circumstances. It's not like 2 years away on holiday. And I think 99% would have been thinking of home.
You mentioned that there was this concern of the Japanese.
Mm.
And you mentioned some of the stories that you may have been hearing as far as propaganda yes. for the Germans. Had you sort of any definites about what was going on at home?
None at all, no. No, because we weren't told much, you see, and censorship was so strong. But I do remember one rumour coming that West Australia had been invaded. I can vividly remember that. And it's amazing how these rumours started. They were pretty clever at getting it to even where it would get to the troops. But I can vividly remember that particular instance. And of course, being Western Australians, that was a big worry. Because nobody could refute it. Nobody did refute it. Nobody came and said, oh, what you're hearing is not true. Because perhaps they didn't know themselves.
Well, Darwin had been bombed.
Yes.
Broome.
Yes. Yeah.
Had you heard about that?
No. No, we hadn't, no. We didn't really hear much about what was going on at home at all. No.
So tell us about the trip home. What did it feel like? When did you realise that you weren't going to Singapore?
Well, we never knew that we even were going to go to Singapore. It was only afterwards that we found that out. But that was what was apparently in the wind coming.
You had the feeling that you were leaving, obviously, that area by going, I presume, down
yes.
into the Indian Ocean again.
And of course, we came home on the Mary, Queen Mary, and no air conditioning, of course, in those days. And the whole ship was sealed up, of course, so that no lights, not a single light. And of course, if you were lucky enough, you got a few inches of deck to go up top and sleep at night time. But it was very, very hot, and a lot of troops on board. But food was pretty good, reasonably good. And I can remember one night coming back, one of the ships in the convoy hit a dhow coming to the Red Sea. And of course, immediately the siren went off. And I can remember I was up on deck at the time, it was the night time, and the Mary she literally left the convoy at an enormous speed, just left the other standing, and she shot off. That was the order, apparently, to the Mary was, if anything happened, she was to go on her own, because she had terrific speed, and she'd go and zigzag. And it would just be a complete fluke for a German submarine to get a torpedo into her, because she'd tremendous speed, and we just left the convoy behind, but it was just a false alarm. And then eventually it all got together again. But it was quite a good, big convoy coming home to Fremantle.
How many were there in the convoy?
Oh, I think there were about, there was the, I think there would have been about four big ships, and of course, plus all the escorts. I can't remember where the Aquitania was. I think she was in that convoy coming back. But there were about four big liners carrying us, including the Mary, and of course quite a big escort of destroyers and whatnot.
But what's the level of sort of stress that a soldier's under on his way home, knowing that they're in a fairly vulnerable situation in a convoy in the middle of the ocean?
Yeah. Well, I don't really know. See, I think the thing is with soldiers, you get a sort of confidence, and you never felt that anything was going to happen to you. I don't think any of us worried about that we were going to find ourselves swimming about in the ocean. Well, I know I didn't. I don't think most of the others did either. They were confident that the escorts were going to get us home, and that the powers that be thought we were going to be safe coming home. No, I don't think we worried about that.
So what was it like when you knew that you were heading towards Fremantle and you were definite that you were coming home?
Well, we were almost to Fremantle before we knew that's where we were going. It was almost right home before we knew.
And what's the feeling then when you realise I'm going to be, with my family again?
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful feeling. And I remember when we got home, we went out to Melville Camp, and we went, and we were sort of got almost immediate leave then. I think we had a medical check, and then we got some leave, quite a good leave at home, which was wonderful.
What was it like pulling in? I presume they didn't bring you right into the harbour.
No, all into gauge roads and then barges home, barges to the land. No, those big ships didn't come in. Well, they couldn't.
Were there people there to meet you in Fremantle?
No, because it had all been kept very hush-hush. No, they weren't. Of course, very quickly everybody knew a convoy was in, but my father knew I was coming on, but of course he had, for security reasons, couldn't tell anybody. I don't think he even told my mother. But most of the people didn't know what units or who would be on that convoy, of course, because that was all strict security until we actually landed. It was interesting. I can remember my father apparently knew some other mothers who had people coming home, and he did say, on the morning the convoy was actually coming in, I think he rang some of them and said, if you go down to the beach, you'll see a convoy coming in. But that's when they were actually almost in, because nobody except the ones living near the coast would have known they were coming. But it was a wonderful feeling to get home, get into a nice clean sheets and showers and good food. Great. And lots of fresh fruit. All those things that you don't realise how much they mean to you. But no.
How long were you to be on leave for?
I think we had a couple of weeks. 2 weeks, I think. And then we were trained over to Queensland for training. Up to the Tablelands.
What's the sense of release after having been in battle and to be at home, to be able to relax?
Well, I think just the ordinariness of coming home to... I think that was the wonderful part of it, you know. You come back to ordinary things, ordinary life.
One of the situations that I've understood is quite a strange one for returning soldiers.
Mm. Yes. Was, and of course lots of your friends were still away, so you really missed them. So they're all in different forces all over the world, everywhere. And sometimes it could be a bit lonely because you tried to track down any that might happen to be home on leave. Actually, I spent that leave with a very old school friend who was in the Air Force. He was a fighter pilot in England. He was out on holiday, and that was the last. He was killed when he went back onto operations again. But we spent quite a long time to get leave together. He would have been a very brilliant lawyer. He was a very, very clever chap. And it was a pretty sad loss. But it's war, isn't it?
What about the return home, the welcome of the local community? With the, as I understand, there were parades.
Yes, we had a march through Perth.
Mm. What was that like?
Oh, it was good, yeah. Very good welcome to home, yes. No, it was great. No, they gave us a great welcome. Marched down the terrace. Yes, I can still remember that. In fact, I've somewhere got some photos of that. No, it was a good welcome home.
Were the streets lined with people?
Yes, there were. Lots of people. And sort of a bit of a ticker tape parade, as I remember. Lots of people leaning out on balconies and whatnot.
What was your reputation at home?
The troops? Oh, I think it was very good. I think that my father kept a lot of cuttings out of the papers, which told of exploits that had happened, you know, and there was no worry about, you know, I suppose they'd released a certain amount from out of security. But generally the reaction to what we'd done was very, very good. I think those people were, I think we came back with a good reputation.
There would have been stories of Tobruk and Alamein creeping through.
Yes.
Did people come up to you and pat you on the back and say things to you at all in the street?
No, I can't remember that. No, I can't. But they did give us a good reception. Because I was still pretty young. Because I'd been very young when I went away. And, it was great. I wasn't engaged at that stage. But I had a girlfriend. It was good to come back. Yes.
So what was it like to know that, you know, you only had 2 weeks to be with your loved ones before you were to go off again?
Well, I think we really just accepted it, you know, that was what we had to do. I felt sorry for my parents, I think, because my brother, of course, had been taken prisoner in the unit, and he was a prisoner of war, and at that stage they didn't really know. He was still just posted missing. And it was very hard for them because they didn't know what had happened to Sam. And I felt very sorry for them, I think, at that time. Um, But, we knew we had to move on to the next stage.
Well, the situation with the Japanese at that stage wouldn't have been looking so grim in Australia. Am I right in thinking that?
Well, I think that people were pretty worried, I think, because the Japanese had, they'd made pretty substantial advances. And, I think there probably was a lot of worry in Australia, really, particularly about those who knew a little bit.
Did you speak to your parents about the situation regarding the war while you were at home?
Oh, yes, I think we did discuss it. Yes, we did talk about it, particularly to my father. He got quite a lot passed to him because he was very tied up in the shipping and looking after all supplies for all and whatnot to ships and to the convoys through his company, McElrath McKechnie. And so he knew quite a bit of what was going on. But of course, he was very tight-lipped about anything that he knew that was likely to be classified.
Did you talk much about your experiences? Did you go into detail?
No, I don't think we ever wanted to talk about it. No, it didn't. And they didn't really ask us. So they knew we probably did not want to talk about it. No, we didn't at all, no. In fact, really, I think a lot of us never have talked much about it. I've never really talked much about it to my sons. And I think a lot of other servicemen have been the same. Perhaps we should have, but we haven't. No.
So knowing the situation at the time, what was the feeling of going off to train? I assume you knew that you were heading off to fight the Japanese.
Yes, we knew we were going to be into the Pacific War. Yes. We didn't know how long we were going to be in training.
What did it feel like to know that you were going to be going to fight the Japanese?
Perhaps we were pretty keen to get stuck into them, actually, because we were worried about Australia. And but the Americans were starting to come in then, of course. And that was giving people, I suppose, at home a lot more confidence. But, of course, at Fremantle there was quite a big... there's a big submarine depot here at Fremantle. And there were American and British submarines. A lot of British submarines here, yeah, in the harbour. In fact, I remember one instance where one of the waterside workers threw a burning mat, I think it was, over into the harbour, and there was oil in the harbour, and the whole harbour caught fire, and all the ships had to try and make their way, get out, up anchor and move out, and there was a hell of a to-do about it. And actually the ship that the blessed mat came off was one that my father's company was handling, and there was huge law cases that went on for donkey's ages over afterwards about it. Very big worry. But there was a lot of support here from the Royal Navy and of course the Americans.
Tell us about the Americans. What was it like to have the Americans in Perth?
Well, if you went to a nightclub, they had it. They occupied it three quarters. they were everywhere. Americans, masses of them.